If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
Before we get to today's show, have you seen the amazing containers that cannabis and hemp products come in these days? I'm talking about those amazing joint tubes you carry around in your pocket or the cool containers edible products come in now. There's a revolution in packaging happening around the cannabis industry. In fact, it's already happened. Our new sponsor, Kush Co., is largely responsible for incredible innovations that are so useful, well, we take them for granted. But these packages have to comply with strict guidelines, be childproof, and all other sorts of regulations. Kush is on top of that. I guess they are really good at what they do because they've sold over a billion units of stuff to more than 5,000 legally operated medical and adult use dispensaries, growers, and producers across North America, South America, and Europe. Check out their site at kushco.com/podcast for more information. The show starts now.
Start fresh and earn it all again. Maybe it's something like Elvis on the big screen, and someone lied in your dreams.
Space.
You've been listening to All for Money, the title track off the forthcoming Green Sky Bluegrass record, due out January 18th, 2019. We're big fans of the Green Sky Bluegrass sound because although they are bluegrass in name, they rock and jam pretty hard for a group that features traditional acoustic instruments like mandolin, banjo, dobro, and of course acoustic guitar and upright bass. All for Money will be the seventh album for this band that has been slugging it out on the road for 18 years. We caught up with Michael Bont to talk about All for Money and all things Green Sky, as they're affectionately called by their fans. Our conversation started when I asked Michael about the exciting trajectory the band is on with the release of All for Money.
You know, like, I kind of feel like, you know, this might be our best album yet, but like, I also feel like, you know, we just continue to do what we've always done, which is like, you know, push ourselves musically. And like, you know, it's just like everything about this whole adventure has just been, you know, more than I could really imagine. I couldn't believe that, you know, 18 years down the road almost, that I'd be playing banjo in a bluegrass band, that's for sure. That's a bluegrass band that's pretty well known for their great live shows.
it's interesting that you still call yourselves a bluegrass band. And I get it. The instrumentation is definitely bluegrass. But what you guys do on stage and the vocal stylings and even the things that you guys sing about is not very bluegrass. I mean, it is well beyond even, you know, newgrass at this point. I mean, there are some things, particularly on this record, that are very non-bluegrassy.
Yep.
Is that an interesting place to be? I mean, I understand that you can be in both settings. You're certainly comfortable in a bluegrass setting at a bluegrass, you know, show or at a bluegrass festival. But it's well beyond bluegrass at this point, right?
Oh, yes, it is definitely way beyond bluegrass at this point. You know, I guess I call ourselves a bluegrass band because I played one of the most bluegrassy instruments.
Right, that's right.
But you know, our show is like what you just said is much more than that nowadays. It's, you know, we draw from all kinds of genres of music, and you know, I feel really blessed to have two great songwriters in the band as well.
Yeah,
and to be able to. You know, one of our things have always been to kind of, like, I just to talk about, like, pushing ourselves musically. And, you know, the fact that we've always considered ourselves, like you said, more than a bluegrass band, but also a bluegrass band. But also one of the, you know, the challenges we've always had and struggled with is how to create a drum, like a drum kit out of five bluegrass instruments. And that's kind of like one of the things that I think might kind of set our, one of the things that sets us apart from a lot of bands is, especially bluegrass bands, that we're just playing more than like a traditional bluegrass like backbeat, and exploring those different genres of like rock and blues and jazz and all those other things, and trying to incorporate them into our music.
Yeah, it's absolutely, because I mean, for you guys to jam on some of these songs, I mean, you don't want your audience to get bored, and you do want to create, you know, an atmosphere where people are dancing around and having a good time. And that backbeat, however you guys create it, is certainly key to the sound at this point, and key to the Green Sky Bluegrass experience.
Yeah. I talk to a lot of fans that, you know, they say all the time, like, you know, they close their eyes and they swear that there's a drummer somewhere in the room.
You mentioned the writers, and you are blessed to have two great writers, Dave and Paul, I think, carry most of the weight when writing.
Yep.
Do they just bring the songs fully formed, and then you guys work them out? How is that process for you, especially as the guy who, you know, has to do these runs and songs and solos and stuff? Do they write them in for you, or is that something that you kind of experiment with when they bring the songs to you guys to perform?
Yeah, that's something that, you know, we definitely experiment with. Basically, you know, the song, when they bring it to the table, will basically the words will be written, and they'll have an idea of, like, how it should go.
Right.
But then we do a thing, what we call, we green sky it. And, you know, everything, we all lay out our own ideas for, you know, rhythms and the cut of a quid, like change the chords even a little bit.
right.
To fit the way that we're changing a rhythm. So yeah, like, you know, kind of like the words come in, and we kind of like, you know, like when we did the demos for this album, I was listening to a lot of the songs, and you'll be amazed that the demos sound completely different than what the finished product ended up being. And, you know, that's part of like the green skyness of it, where like songs can take on this completely different,
right?
This completely different, you know, entity, just because somebody else, one of us, had a different idea for it, and everybody else kind of like, well, that's how we should do it, you know.
Because you're a touring band and you're on the road more than, well, you enjoy being on the road, but I was going to say more often than not, when you're writing a record, particularly this record, were you writing for the stage as opposed to people listening on, you know, shitty headphones or in their car or whatever? Because it seems like there's a lot of pent-up energy on this record, and it seems like every song could definitely make a set list without a problem. I mean, these are all bangers, for lack of a better word, or for a borrowed hip-hop term. But these are all, you know, these are all live tracks, right?
Yeah. You know, I have a dog. It's like,
all good.
Being real. She's barking right now. You want to go back outside? Go back outside. I think you're better outside right now. No? Okay. So, I'm sorry, repeat the question one more time.
Well, it just seems like these are songs that are made for the road. These are songs that you thought about how you're going to perform them, not just how you're going to put them on tape for a record.
Yeah, that was kind of one of our ideas for this album was, you know, I think our previous albums was more like, you know, create the song to suit the album, but try to keep them short. This one, we just kind of, but the idea was to, like, let's make an album that's kind of sounds like a Green Sky show.
Right.
And, you know, so that's why there's three, you know, super long songs on there that have extended jams and improvisational sections, you know, and that's something that you'd see at a Green Sky show, like, every single night, and what's something that our fans, you know, have come to expect. And yeah, so, you know, it's like, that was kind of like our main approach was, let's try to, you know, not limit ourselves to the 4 to 5 minute box on every song. You know,
right.
if there's a song that we thought could need to be expanded because of like it that served the song, then yeah, there's the dog.
It's okay.
All right. So, yeah. So, you know, so like, you know, so there, that definitely was one of our big ideas was to, you know, serve the, what would be more of like our live show than actually like the 4 to 5 minutes, you know, typical song box that most people try to keep themselves in when recording an album.
And you're of course talking about Courage for the Road and What You Need. Is that, those would be the two
yep.
longer ones.
Well, and All for Money too.
All for Money. Yeah. And let's talk about All for Money because it's an ironic title for the record and for the song, probably, because that's not why you guys are doing this. And it's probably, you know, I read some comments, I think Dave wrote it, right? I read some comments about the song. Sorry.
Paul actually, confused
for a second. Paul actually wrote it. And I think, you know, it does speak to a band on the rise who's doing this out of love and out of, you know, wanting to serve the fans as much as it's out of making dough. Talk a bit about that theme for a second and about how, you know, you guys have to love what you're doing first, I think, to be out on the road all the time doing this and just hope that, you know, you can make a couple bucks doing it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it all started, you know, but that, you know, I think a lot of the All for Money concept, you know, starts as an insight to our sense of humor. Like if you know us and know our band, we are a bunch of funny guys, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, that's kind of how it's always done for us. Like we've never expected to be where we are, but at the same time, I love where we are and I love where we come and you know, it's like how many fans love our music and how we serve as like almost like a release for people. And I think it's really, really, really exciting, to be able to do that for somebody else. Something I like to call the piano man syndrome.
right.
Or excuse me, the piano man effect.
Right. Either way, I get it.
Yeah, either way. Yeah, it's more of a effect than a syndrome, I guess. But so, yeah, you know, and that song just started, you know, started out as like, you know, what if the first lyrics are, you know, what if you did it all for money and nobody really cared? I mean, that's kind of so anti us.
Right, exactly.
that it's never been about the money for us, and people love us. And that's, you know, like I was saying, like we're like almost like a release for a lot of people. Like, you know, if you're having like hard times or you have like these emotional rushes or, you know, it's good to be able to, you know, serve that kind of purpose for people.
And that's what pushes you guys. That's what motivates you guys to do longer sets, to play harder, to come up with an album like All for Money, to appear. I know it was just announced today at Red Rocks in September. I mean, it's really your fan base that's pushing the agenda, or is it you guys pushing? What's the combination of, is it more fans pushing the agenda, or is it you guys as a band pushing the agenda, or is it, you know, equal parts band and?
You know, I think it's tough to say, but, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. Our fans push us to, you know, in our world, to keep our sets original. Mm-hmm. And because we play so much on the road, we always have this notion of like every show has got to be better than the one previous, which being on the road as long as we have, we're kind of setting pretty high standards for ourselves at this point.
Right.
but for some reason, I feel like every time we play a show, I'm just like, God, that might have been our best show yet. I don't know how we can still continue to do this, you know? But that's part of our magic and our appeal. Everything always seems new.
Our conversation will continue in just a bit. Off the top of the show, though, I told you about Cushco Holdings. They are, by the way, a publicly traded company under the ticker KSHB and the parent to innovative cannabis industry leaders such as Kush Supply Company, Kush Energy, The Hybrid Creative, and Coletto Packaging Solutions. They are doing amazing things aside from sponsoring our show. You should check out their website at cushco.com/podcast for more information. Now, back to the show. Who's the metalhead in the band? Because it's not mine anymore. Could be a Metallica song with different instrumentation. Certainly, lyrically, it could be a metal song. And because it is pretty hard, even given the instrumentation, it's pretty out there for a quote-unquote bluegrass band. Who wrote that, and what made you guys decide to do it that way?
That was a Dave song. And actually, on our last album, we recorded the track that never got released. And that actually was a continuation of the like a metal. They had an idea of it's like writing like a metal song with like basically like metal lyrics, like what you just said, right. Like Metallica. It can seem like, you know, like that Dave Hetfield kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's almost a continuation of the last album where we tried to write a song that was like along like the metal, like kind of heavier hard rock kind of genre, and it just never panned out. So this is a continuation of that almost, and I think it turned out great.
Why do I do it alone? It's just rock and roll, right? That's the thing about Do It Alone and so many of these songs, they're rock songs. I mean, you know, some of them have a metal bent to them, but these are rock songs with a guy on banjo, a guy on mandolin, a guy on guitar. Like, I, you know, what are you guys listening to that inspires you or inspires the songwriters or the playing? I don't know what, but I mean, these are rock and roll songs. And I remember talking to Sam Bush about it. I mean, this just want to play rock music. You just happen to choose the instruments that you choose, right?
I started out as a guitar player, and you know, I'm of the age where I grew up listening to, like, you know, Metallica, like Injustice for All was right. I remember one of the bigger albums when I was a teenager. And I've always loved the whole metal thing, and also I was a big punk rocker in high school. I'm probably closest to the metalhead in the band. But I think that was never our intention. It's just like we all kind of like the rock vibe. And it's always been a goal for us to, you know, put on a rock show with bluegrass instruments.
Right. And do you think, there are some bluegrass bands or newgrass bands that are experimenting with adding more instrumentation to the live show, or changing up kind of what they're doing? And I don't want to say growing. I want to say experimenting with other instruments. Is that something that you foresee in your future, or right now are you kind of comfortable in this pocket?
You know, I never know what to. I never put limitations on myself like that for the future because of like how far that this has come in the last 18 years. To put a limit on, like, I have no idea. But I would honestly say, like, we will probably continue to just play what we do and expand upon it. I think, you know, there's always something. There's always some weird new effect that someone's experimenting with. And, you know, the thing about, like, experimenting with those kind of effects is, like, you can't use them all the time. And, you know, where does that particular effect serve the song, where, like, this is the moment where this effect should be, because you can't have it all over the place, because then this doesn't sound interesting to people if you're playing the same thing all the time.
Right.
So that's the way that we expand, where, like, there's always somebody that's got some new toy that they're playing around with.
Yeah, yeah.
And a sound check, you're like, oh my god, I can't handle this new toy that so and so is. But then, like, they figure out where to put it in the live show, and you're like, yeah, that's where it goes, right there.
How much input did Dominic John Davis have as a producer on the sound? I know he's a long time friend, and he worked on this record with you in Echo Mountain Sound in Asheville. How much input does he have on, you know, where sounds go and where you can just add that little something? You know, in All for Money, there's this really spacey jam thing at the end. Is that you guys, or is that him, or is it a combination? How does that stuff come to fruition?
I think it's a little bit of both. But I mainly think that in our world, our own worst enemy is ourselves. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the studio, and they just had that sixth voice of like, guys, you like had this track like six takes ago. Why don't you go back and listen to that? You know, because we had it. And, you know, we don't have to push ourselves, and to be able to have somebody that not only knows sounds, but also that we trust enough to be like, I think you guys got it, and you guys had it. You guys should come into the booth and listen to like three or four tracks ago. And it's usually like that's the kind of voice we always needed in the studio. Not just more of like the encouragement of like, you guys are continuing to push yourselves, and you guys can continue to record this tune, but I think we have it. You guys should come in and listen. You know, that's the kind of voice I think that we've always felt like we've needed in the studio.
You guys are set to do your New Year's Eve run in Chicago, of all places, for the end of the year. And then yep. A bit of a break, and then you're back on it. I mean, you are all of January and a good chunk of February back on the road. It's so important for you guys to play on the road, right? I mean, it's where you have to be. Probably to get your sound out, to make money, and to have fun. Is it work still for you guys to be out on the road so much?
It is definitely work to be out on the road, but you know, it's also we're at this point where, like, you know, I love my job, and if you know, and people tend to think that being a musician isn't actually a pretty easy job, mm-hmm. but it's always the exact opposite. What people don't see are the long hours and all the travel and the late nights,
right.
and have to show up every single night and put it out there and like try to leave it out there every single night. It takes a lot of energy, a lot more energy than people think it does, you know, but I couldn't think of a better job to have. That's for sure.
After 18 years being with these guys, does the road get a little bit, crazy between all of you? Are you still all pretty much getting along and having a good time?
Yes, we continue to have a good time and get along. And I don't know, I think a long time ago, Anders said something like, you don't get to choose your brothers, but you still have to love them.
Right.
And that's kind of always been our thing. Is here we go. Just like it's us against the world. And we are like a band of brothers in that respect.
Interestingly, you are doing a bunch of shows with Circles Around the Sun. How psyched are you to do those shows with a band that is, I would say, diametrically opposed to, it's so different sonically from what you guys do. Are you psyched to play with those guys? or share of course, the stage of course. With those guys?
Yeah, of course. You know, the guest cause all that's kind of what I always been one of our things is to have someone who's an opener that's up and coming and really, really good. And it, to us, it doesn't matter what the sound is, because we're still going to come out and sound like a rock band, even if it is a rock band that opens up for us, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's more for us. It's just, I don't know, just getting to meet new bands and new people and,
right. You
know, getting to hang out on the road and see how, like, how their camaraderie is. It's like a big social experiment, I guess, or something. I don't know.
I'm excited to hear about the sit-ins and catch some of those sit-ins live and, you know, catch some of that stuff on tape from Nugs and stuff, because, I mean, I could only imagine what Neil might bring to the stage with you guys or vice versa. I mean, those are some, that's a crazy combination. And then, of course, Billy Strings, who rounds out the tour towards the end. Well, we should mention Chris Jacobs in the middle, but Billy's opening up a bunch of dates, and it's interesting that you mentioned that you're a punk rocker at heart, because I think Billy has a similar kind of background and a similar upbringing in wanting to, you know, originally play punk rock music. How talented is that guy? Do you ever think, like, I can't believe that this guy is as young as he is and as talented as he is. I mean, it's outstanding.
Yeah, it blows my mind. I always like to tell the story of, so I've known Billy since he was about 14 years old. He's a Michigander, like most of us.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing about Billy is he's always been that good. Like, even when he was 14 years old, he'd come to a picking session, he'd be like, "Who are you?" Like, "My name's Billy." And I'm like, "Dude, you." And he was always that guy that has always been good and continues to push the boundaries. And, you know, and we're just so happy to have him along. He's been like a younger brother to us for a long time, and it's just really happy to see that, you know, he's being successful in his music, because boy, that kid can shred.
There's so many up and comers in this genre, and, you know, we always talk to, you know, the likes of Leftover, or even when we had Sam Bush on, about some of the bands like Horseshoes and Hand Grenades and the Little Smokies and these bands that are, you know, following on your heels or following on Leftover's heels or the Dusters' heels or what have you. What's your advice to them when you see them? You know, particularly, you know, the ones that are fairly accomplished at this point. I mean, what's Strings and Souls like when you're backstage hanging out with these guys? Do you offer them any advice, or do you wait for them to come to you? How does that work?
I think advice comes from just watching our dichotomy on the road, and how we interact and react to each other and how our crew interacts together. And, you know, and a lot of the stuff that we learned from bands like, you just said, like Leftover, Sam M, and Railroad Earth. We learned a lot from watching them on the road. Railroad Earth, especially, they took us under their wings a long time ago. We were, they, you know, I feel like considered like to be the younger brother to those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned a lot from just watching them. And, you know, that's kind of what I think a lot of younger bands just kind of see what we do on the road. And the main thing being is you have to get along, you should have a good time. And it's just like, you just have to, like, you can't give up, because you're going to have hard times. You're going to have bad shows. Everybody has bad days. But you still have to continue on and put on a show the next night, you know, depending, it doesn't matter what happened the night previous. It's just still got to continue on, and how well we continue to, you know, influence the younger generation in that respect, where it's like, it's as simple as just being able to get along, almost, right, in a way, you know. that being the big thing.
Well, congratulations on the seventh record. It is amazing, and all of the touring and your place in the scene. I mean, it is exceptional, and kudos to you for you and for the band for sticking to it and bringing fans what they love. We're psyched about the Red Rocks announcement. You're, of course, also playing in Vegas at the Bender Jamboree in mid-April. And, man, two nights in Detroit. Like, it just seems like a party. So people will definitely want to check out the website for more details, and we'll leave that in the description below. But thank you, man. Thanks for taking the time, and thank you for all that you do. We certainly appreciate it.
Of course, anytime, Ira. And I actually love what you do as well. Just so you should know.
Thanks, dude. Appreciate it. So much goodness packed into 20 minutes or so of conversation with an absolutely brilliant banjo player and key member of the Green Sky team. Thanks again, Michael. All for Money is an incredible record which really should make top 10 lists next year. There are so many great songs on the record that I suspect will get lots of play on the road this winter and well into the Green Sky touring schedule for years to come. If you've never seen these guys, I encourage you to do so. And if you have, you already, I'm sure, are well into their music. I mean, honestly, how could you not be? For more on Green Sky Bluegrass, visit their website at greenskybluegrass.com. Lots of tour dates and information is always available there and on their social media channels. Before we leave you, have a listen to another cut off of All for Money, the lead track on the record. Here is Do It Alone.
Do it alone. Why do
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.